Today we are going to be talking about opportunities in East Asia and the Pacific, and I want to thank you for joining me today. My name is Carlene Velez, and I am an Outreach and Recruitment Specialist at the Institute of International Education, and I am the primary support person for opportunities in East Asia and the Pacific. I know that it must have been hectic getting here today with everything that's going on with health and welfare issues around the country, but I thank you for being here with me today. And I want you to know that I am here to answer any questions that you might have as the presentation goes on. First, I would like to talk a little bit about the Fulbright mission for those of you who might not be familiar with it. In partnership with 160 countries worldwide, we offer opportunities for faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, lawyers, and other professionals to teach, study, or conduct research abroad, and I will go through these categories in the presentation below. The ultimate goal of the Fulbright program is to foster mutual understanding between nations and advance knowledge across communities while improving lives around the world. The Fulbright program was established in 1946, and it is the U.S. government's flagship international educational exchange program. It is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State and administered by the Institute of International Education. As we're talking through this, I can see questions coming in the question box. Thank you. Please keep them coming in, and I will answer them at the end. Just to give you an idea, I will try to save 30 minutes at the end to go through questions and answers. Fulbright is committed to promoting diversity and inclusion in all of our programs. We really strive to make sure that the applicants and the grantees of the Fulbright Awards represent the diversity of American society, and we want to show that to societies abroad. So we encourage all people to apply to our programs, even if you are from a traditionally underrepresented area. We accept people of all ages, national origins, race, color, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, disability. If you have questions about these specific categories, please do reach out. It is our mission to not only state this in name, but we also reach out to underserved institutions as well, historically black colleges and universities, minority-serving institutions, to make sure that we don't just say this, but we actively work to promote diversity inclusion in all of our programs. Fulbright by the numbers. This is a very exciting slide because it demonstrates just how robust the Fulbright program is. We offer over 8,000 awards annually. Over 2,000 of them are to U.S. students. About 4,000 are for foreign students pursuing graduate education in the United States. 800 are for U.S. scholars and administrators, and that is you all. We have about 900 visiting scholars and then 400 language teaching assistants who work at local universities and community colleges. We have about 390,000 Fulbrighters who have participated in the program since its inception. It's something that we're very proud of. This slide illustrates the distribution of awards that were relevant for last year's award cycle. So if you look, the postdoctoral awards were about 8% of our grantees. The administrators made up about 9%. And then we had teaching awards make up about 17%, research 28%, and then teaching research combination 38%. This distribution changes year by year because for many awards, you actually can select your preferred activity. So you can select to go as a teacher, a researcher, or to do a combination. I often get a question about which am I more likely to get or what do they need more, teachers or researchers? And really the question is, it depends. Each country has its own preference, but really you are the strongest candidate for when you apply for an award and an activity based on what you can support with your own academic work. If you are a lecturer, for example, or a community college teacher, a teaching award might be where you are the strongest. If you teach and research and have high marks in both categories, then a teaching research award might be the most appropriate. So really, the distribution does change year by year, and you are the most competitive when you apply in an area that you can support with your CV in your own personal work. The eligibility for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. First and foremost, because this is a program of the U.S. government, U.S. citizenship is required. Unfortunately, green card holders are not allowed to apply, but if you do naturalize, then you would automatically become eligible to apply for a Fulbright. And then after that, almost everything depends. Different awards have different degree requirements. Some require a PhD or a terminal degree. Others require an MA or higher education teaching experience. And there are some awards that are open to professionals that have about 10 years experience in the field as well. So you would want to look at the awards catalog, and I will take you on a tour of that later on, and you can see where you can find the exact information about the eligibility for the award to which you are applying. Okay, let's look at some program highlights from East Asia and the Pacific. There are 16 countries represented in this region, from Mongolia to New Zealand. We have 48 unique award offerings in this region, and there are over 175 grants possible. So you have a wide range of opportunities in this region. We also offer the flex option, which is to take multiple visits for shorter periods of time to the specific country that you are applying to. We have created this program just to offer the maximum flexibility. And all of the details and guidelines about the flex option are available inside the awards description. Let's look at some regional highlights. The first thing that is the most exciting is that the All Disciplines Awards are offered in almost every country in the region. When there is an All Disciplines Award, it means that it's literally open to all disciplines. So it allows you the maximum flexibility. Generally, these awards offer teaching, research, or a teaching research combination as their activity, so you can also choose your activity. They generally also give you a time duration, so you can match it up with perhaps a sabbatical schedule or whatnot. The thing with the All Disciplines Award is that when you apply to a country, if you are an electrical engineer, you might be competing with a linguist. And you might also be competing with a medical researcher or public policy expert. So you really don't know what is going to happen at the end in the actual selection. But if you are competitive, then you are really going to be a strong candidate up against people no matter what discipline they are from. And so just keep in mind that if you are an artist and you're applying and you don't see an art-specific award, the All Disciplines Award is for you. If you are an engineer and you don't see that award, the All Disciplines Award is for you. And so you do want to keep in mind that these All Disciplines Awards are extremely flexible. We also have awards that are specific to social science, humanities, and the arts, and these are particular to China, Korea, and Taiwan. These are the fields that they want to receive applicants in. Business and public policy. There are opportunities in Australia and Burma. If you are a journalist, there is a journalism award in Japan. If you are a postdoc candidate, and by postdoc, we define it as having filed your PhD within the past 5 years, so you could technically be an assistant professor and still apply for one of these postdoc awards. They're available in Australia, China, and Taiwan. If you are a STEM person, Australia has multiple awards in the STEM field. If you teach a course that could fall under study of the United States, so perhaps you're a sociologist or an anthropologist or an African American studies expert, you could apply under the study of the United States award, and those awards are available in Hong Kong and Japan. And if you are an international education administrator, we have awards for shorter term 2-week programs to Korea, Taiwan, and Japan. So as you can see, we have a wide range of opportunities in the East Asia and Pacific region, and we hope one of them is a good match for you. Okay, let's start out by looking at some senior scholar opportunities. In Australia calls these award Distinguished Chair Awards. And we offer 6 partnership awards to Australia for senior scholars. They're generally 4 to 6 months. They often start in February, so it would be a spring semester thing. And letters of invitation are required. So if you look over at these opportunities, you can see they're all affiliated with a very specific university in Australia. Often the topics are somewhat geared towards the specialty at that institution. So if you are interested in the fields listed here and science and technology, public policy, arts, humanities, and social science, entrepreneurship and innovation, multiple disciplines, which has a select list, or science, technology, and innovation, you can look at these specific awards. For the Distinguished Chair Awards, we do want people who are established in their field. So we generally, some of them allow for associate professors, full professors, and above for these particular opportunities. We do have opportunities in Australia for other levels of professors, but for the Distinguished Chair designation, we do want people who are more advanced in their career. Korea also has a Distinguished Lectureship opportunity, and this is an award for 4 to 10 months. And this one in particular is for teaching only at Yonsei University. Just as a note, this is the only teaching opportunity at Yonsei University. You cannot apply through the All Discipline or Multiple Disciplines Award to teach at Yonsei University. And just one more note about this award and all of the awards to Korea. You are not eligible for these awards if you are dual American and Korean citizens. You have to enter the award on your U.S. passport to be eligible. And all of those details are specifically listed in the award description. Postdoctoral opportunities. First, you can see there is a postdoctoral fellowships in Australia. We offer 3 different postdocs. 2 of them are with pre-identified host institutions, Deakin University and the University of Newcastle, and 1 of them is an All Disciplines Award. The nice thing about the All Disciplines Award is that it allows you to work not only at a university, but you could also work at a think tank, a nonprofit, a government organization. And so if your postdoc research that you want to do is outside of a university, then this would be the award, the Kinghorn Foundation Award would be the one you want to look at. All of the postdoc awards are for 3 to 10 months, and a letter of invitation is required. And you also need to include a personal statement or, in the case of the Kinghorn Award, an impact statement. But again, all of the details about these awards are listed in the award description. The other postdoctoral fellowships that are available in the region, in China, there's one in the humanities, social sciences, and the arts. And in Taiwan, there's one on education, humanities, professional fields, and social sciences. And so the China award is 3 to 10 months, and the award to Taiwan is 5 to 10 months. In China, a letter of invitation is required, and in Taiwan, it is preferred. As far as language proficiency goes, China is asking for an intermediate Mandarin level or justification that you can conduct your research without knowledge of Mandarin. And in Taiwan, they state that English is sufficient as long as you, again, justify how you can complete your research project without language skills. Okay, we also have a wide variety of opportunities for professionals. Many people think that Fulbright opportunities are only available to faculty members, but in fact, we have more and more awards that are open to professionals in the field to conduct professional projects. So back to Australia, there is a Fulbright Future Scholarship, the one that was on the postdoc page, funded by the Kinghorn Foundation. They are also open to professionals pursuing projects. The Fulbright Scholar Award in All Disciplines is also open to professionals in Australia. And the award in Australia-U.S. Alliance Studies is also open to professionals. In China, the Social Science, Humanities, and Arts Award for research is open to professionals as long as you have a publication record, either in academic or trade journals, then you can apply to that program. Japan has a journalism award open to professionals. With this, you must be a working journalist with at least 3 years of experience. Mongolia accepts professionals in their All Disciplines Award, as long as you have a strong professional or industry background. And Burma has an award, the Fulbright Public Policy Fellowship, with a minimum of 3 to 5 years work experience and a master's degree in public policy. So if you are a professional, please know that there are many opportunities with Fulbright as well. Then moving on to some multi-country opportunities. The first multi-country opportunity is the ASEAN Award. This allows you to visit 2 to 3 ASEAN countries, including Laos. So if you have an interest in Laos, this is actually the only award that allows you to go there. We do not have a single country award to Laos. So this is something to keep in mind if that is your area of expertise. You can stay for 3 to 6 months, and the research must be relevant to the broader ASEAN region. Letters of invitation are preferred for this award, and English is sufficient, again, as long as the feasibility of conducting your project is demonstrated in the project statement. And just to give you a little bit of background about that, some people demonstrate feasibility by talking about the English-speaking colleagues they'll be working with. Others talk about people they might hire as translators to work with them on their projects. So there are a wide variety of ways to demonstrate feasibility. The next multi-country opportunity is the Cross-Strait Studies Research Program. This is a 5 to 10 month long program that is split between China and Taiwan with no more than 60% of your time in either country. The nice thing about this award is that you can also propose short-term travel to Hong Kong. Invitation letters are required by both countries, and your project will be reviewed by both countries. And for this award, English is sufficient as long as you demonstrate feasibility in the project statement. Just so that you know, in this region, generally English is sufficient as long as you demonstrate feasibility. I feel like I've said this multiple times, but one of the misconceptions is that you have to speak another language to apply for a Fulbright, but that is actually not true in many awards as long as you can demonstrate feasibility of your research in English. And another special feature about awards in the East Asia and Pacific region is that there's a regional travel program. This allows grantees to go to another country in the region to give a conference, workshop, or lecture. It is particular to the program, and you must be invited by a host in an EAP country, and they are expected to do some sort of cost sharing with that program. But that is an exciting opportunity to visit other areas in the region. You are not allowed to go to conduct research in those areas, but you can go to give lectures or workshops. Okay, what I will do is I will take a small tour of the catalog website. If you're in your web browser, you would go to the URL awards.cies.org, and from there you can actually search by region, for example, East Asia and the Pacific, or you can search by country. For example, you can search by Bhutan. And so, or Brunei, right? You can go and search in the region. What I am going to do is I am going to search by East Asia and the Pacific to make sure that I have only the East Asian countries coming up and not some other countries and other regions. And it allows me to see all 49 awards. From here, on the left side of the screen, I have additional search criteria. So, for example, in the discipline, I could search by linguistics. And if I search, 8 awards appear. And I can search through these awards. These are awards that are specifically seeking people in the field of linguistics. And I could go through and look at the additional details. So for example, if I look at that All Disciplines Award to the Philippines, I have 4 tabs that give me information over here. And each tab has very specific information. The first one, the award details, it talks specifically about what you would be doing if you were teaching or doing research. How many courses would you be teaching? What are the expectations that they have of you? And then it gives you details about the grant length of time that you would be there, 4 to 5 months for teaching and 3 to 4 months for research. It would indicate the grant start date, and also the specific locations. There are some limits to locations in some countries, and other countries are more open. So you would have to read specifically to talk about or to really understand what they're asking for. I often get a question about, well, it says applicants are encouraged to affiliate with universities outside of Metro Manila. Can I still apply to Metro Manila? Like those types of questions that are in contradiction to the location. All I can encourage you to do is to read them carefully and really try to abide by the requests in this as much as possible. If they want you to be outside of Metro Manila, if you have an opportunity to connect with someone outside of Metro Manila, then it is supporting some of the goals of the program, which is to diversify where they have applicants. So really do pay attention to the location and abide by those. Right here it says applications are sought in all disciplines, but then it gives you a list of disciplines. And as you can see right here, linguistics is listed, but there might be a discipline that you are from, for example, medical sciences, that is not listed. So I often get the question, can I apply for this award even though my field is medical sciences? Technically, yes. You are allowed to apply for the award because it says all disciplines are accepted. The list down here of disciplines that does not include medical sciences, for example, this is more like a wish list of what the country, the host country, would like. But if you are from medical sciences, please feel free to go ahead and apply anyway, because they are open to all disciplines and they might not get people from their wish list items and they might decide to move on to other fields. And so you will still have a chance of getting an award even if your award is not listed there. One more thing about this main page is over here on the right side you can see the application deadline of Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. You can see the activities that are permissible under this award, research, teaching, or a combination. You can see the degree requirement, a PhD is not required. And then also the candidate profile, academics, all level including career. And you can see the number of grants that are available. And finally, you have my contact information. So you want to pay attention to all of this. If you're applying to an award that has only one grant, that's great if you are the one person who can get that grant. If you want a little more flexibility, you might apply to an award that has a couple grants so that you have more opportunities to get selected. In the award requirements tab, this is a very important tab because it talks first about your invitation requirement, where in this case it's preferred. It talks about any language proficiency requirement or additional requirements. It also gives a little bit more information about the applicant profile. And so you do want to read this and see, for example, for teaching grants, you must have 3 years of teaching experience at a university, college, or community college. Teaching assistantships do not count. So you would want to make sure that you have that 3-year requirement, because if you do not, then your application would not be eligible. And then you can see some additional comments that they have about the program or links that are relevant to this award. The third tab, the stipend and benefits tab, this is very important. It highlights how much your stipend will be per month. And remember, a Fulbright award is a stipend. It is not a salary. And so keep that in mind when you're talking to your university about your leave policies, that you'll be receiving a stipend, not a grant or a salary that's supposed to be used for your research activities back at your host institution. It also highlights the living allowance that you can get, and also any additional benefits for dependents. The nice thing about the Fulbright Scholar Program is that about 40% of our awards or 50% of our awards do have dependent support. And in this case, this is an example of getting some additional funds for dependents. This tab also talks about the airfare that you are allotted, any extra money for books or incidentals, and then in cases where it is available, a dependent tuition allowance. So you can look through all of the benefits that are available to you and to family members if you are bringing them. The fact that Fulbright is very family friendly is one of the things that we're also very proud of, because it allows not only you but your entire family to have an amazing experience as you work to, again, promote mutual understanding. The last step, the country overview, gives you a little bit of background about the region or the country that you're going to. And so it's important that you just read that to familiarize yourself before you decide to apply. So in a nutshell, that is the Fulbright Scholar Program. You would click over here to begin your application process when you are ready. But all of the awards, we tried to make them as comprehensive as possible. And if you are reading an award and you get stuck, my contact information is here. You can either give me a call, send me an email. I try to answer them within 24 to 48-hour turnaround time just to make sure that I can respond to you whenever you have questions. With that in mind, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the questions from the audience here and start to answer some of these. And if I am not able to get to your question, then I would just encourage you to follow up with an email to me. Okay, I have a question. Does having native cultural and language proficiency help strengthen the application? This is more an it depends, because above and beyond anything, they're looking at the academic nature of your present or of your application. So they look at you first as an academic. If there's a language proficiency requirement and you have that, of course, that will make you a strong applicant. It's very common that we have heritage applicants return to their country of origin to do some research after they've become U.S. citizens. That's a very common thing, and they do have an advantage because they know the local language and culture, but that is not the primary deciding factor. It really is the academic nature of your application that will stand out. Okay, the next question that I have. I know it's hard to think down the line with the current global pandemic, but do you foresee any particular knock-on effects with the next cycle of applications? At this current time, because we're recruiting for 21-22, which is we'll start in about 18 months, we are moving forward as usual. This is the first time we've ever had a disruption in the Fulbright program since 1946, and so we are hopeful that in the next 18 months, things will have settled down in the global health culture. So for right now, we are moving forward, and just know that the health and well-being of all of our grantees is of utmost importance. So if there is any concern, we work with the grantees right away to make sure that they are able to return home, which is what we have been doing recently with scholars abroad. So I would encourage you to continue moving forward, and if there are any changes, they will be posted on our website. Okay. I have a colleague in Japan. Does he write the letter of invitation? If not, who does the letter come from? Okay, so the letter of invitation, the colleague in Japan would be the one who would have to try to determine that with possibly the chair of the department or maybe the dean of the school that he is in. Some colleagues are able to write the invitation on behalf of the school. Others have to just draft the letter and send it to their dean to have their dean write it. So if you are trying to secure a letter of invitation, I would work with that host and see what the standards are in their institution and have them prepare the letter in that sense. Okay, I am a senior academic who has been an administrator for the past 12 years. Are there Fulbright seeking administrative higher ed leadership experience, or must I apply in my disciplinary interest? That's actually a great question. We actually do have some awards in higher education administration, and I'm blanking on the country right now, but Jeff, if you actually email me, I can send that to you. It's not in East Asia and the Pacific region. It is in another world region. But we do have people who are seeking administrators as well. I think the most important thing to keep in mind to have a competitive application is that you want your dossier or your work to match the work that you're demonstrating on your CV to match what they're asking for in the award. And so as an administrator, you would need to figure out, have you published as an administrator or are you just doing the administrative roles? I think that you would want to talk with one of the advisors to see how to orient yourself a little bit to make that possible. Because we at Fulbright feel very strongly that there is a Fulbright for everyone. It's just a matter of finding that match that matches your skills, your career trajectory, and your interests. So please do reach out if you have more questions about that. Okay, what should be included in the letter of invitation and to whom should it be sent? Okay, that's a great question. If you go to the CIES.org website and type in invitation, we have a web page that is called Letters of Invitation and Creating Contacts Abroad. It gives you a little bit of the information of what should be included in the invitation. Certain countries require different things in the invitation. For example, some of the awards to Europe require that invitations stipulate that they will provide housing for the scholar. Other awards in East Asia and Pacific, it's a little bit more broad as far as what the invitation letter can contain. But I can tell you from experience that I've had in peer review committees when the peers are evaluating the application, if there is an invitation letter that not only states that they welcome the scholar, but talks a little bit about the research that the scholar will be doing there or the teaching or the collaboration between the U.S. scholar and the scholars at the host institution, those are the letters that are usually the strongest. It's not a letter that just says, you know, so-and-so would be welcome to do teaching and research here, where it doesn't seem like they have an idea in mind. Because this is a cross-cultural exchange program, the strongest letters of invitations are ones that actually talk about that collaboration that will happen as a result of the Fulbright. Okay, with regards to the stipend, are we allowed to accept a salary from the host institution then on top of the stipend, especially if the country is low for the stipend is low for the host country? In that case, no, your stipend is what you are allowed to do. You can accept your salary from your home institution. For example, if you are on sabbatical and your sabbatical allows you to receive full pay for a semester or half pay for a year, some type of a situation like that, you are allowed to accept that or a salary top-off from your home institution, but you cannot accept money from your host institution on top of your stipend. So please do keep that in mind when you're applying. Not all stipends are the same, but each person has to evaluate which situation will work best for them and for their family. Do different grants have different due dates? Okay, for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, the core program for teaching research or a teaching research combination professional project, the due date for those are all September 15th, 2020. However, we do have some international education administrator programs, and those have different due dates, but those are for administrators to participate in administrative-oriented activities, meeting with different host institutions or different university administrators, and those are 2 weeks long, and those have a variety of due dates. But for the most part, everything is due on September 15th. Okay, I see partial maintenance in the title of the Fulbright Page Award. What does that mean? Okay, so the Partial Maintenance Award, that is something that is in the title. I would email me specifically if you have a question about that, but it is just the way that they have titled it, maybe for their own administrative purposes. The stipend that's listed there, though, should still be the actual stipend. What advice do you have for completing the application to earn an award? Okay, one thing I would like to encourage you guys to do is to really check in often with this webinar page. What we have usually around August is an application walkthrough where we give you some additional tips on completing your application. But the biggest tip that I have in the beginning for making a successful application is to be very thoughtful about the project statement. So in your project statement, we have some guiding questions on our website that you can use and you can follow. But just remember that the applications are going to be reviewed domestically by a peer review committee. So if you are in an engineer, you'll be in an engineering committee. You might be an electrical engineer, and the people reviewing it might be from other engineering disciplines, but you will be in a group of engineers being reviewed. However, if you make it through peer review and your application is forwarded onto the host country, you will be reviewed by a panel that might be more diverse than that. So an engineering application could be reviewed by a historian or by a social scientist or something like that. So when you're writing your project statement, make sure that you get feedback both from people inside your discipline and outside of your discipline. I think that's one of the key pieces of advice that we give for completing a successful application. Also, pay very close attention to your methods and the scope of your project, making sure that it's realistic what you're proposing and how you can get that done. And the final thing is really just keeping in mind, we have a couple short answer questions on the application, for example, impact or your need to be there. One thing that comes up a lot is we see applicants proposing research, but there's no clear reason why they have to be in Taiwan to do this research. It might be some, I don't know, statistical research that's not really connected to Taiwan. Then why do you need to be in Taiwan to do this research? Can't you just do it from your computer at home? So you do really want to make a case about why you have to be in that host country to do the teaching or research that you're proposing. I hope those suggestions are helpful. But you can also visit our website for additional suggestions, or come August and a little bit of September, we will have the application walkthroughs that will give you some more advice. So the multi-country possibilities or opportunities, is it only possible to combine countries in the same region as defined by Fulbright, or would it be possible to combine East Asia and South Asia country? Okay, for that question, you would want to look at the Fulbright Global Scholar Award. The ASEAN Award is only for those ASEAN countries. You can't even go to some of the other East Asian or Pacific countries. It's only the ASEAN countries. The Cross Strait is only for China and Taiwan. But the Global Scholar Award, which I have to say for all of your reference, is by far the most competitive award in our entire catalog, does allow you to go to two different world regions. So if you're interested in research that bridges over between East Asia and South Asia, then you would apply to that Global Scholar Award. The one thing to keep in mind if you are considering a Global Scholar Award is you really do want to make sure to make a case about why your research needs to be in those different countries. For example, I was talking to a biologist who was studying a specific snake breed, and this snake breed was available in Japan and maybe in India, I think it might have been, or something like that. I can't remember the exact details, but if you're looking at something that is only available in those countries, then you can make a strong justification about why you need to be in those different countries. So please do keep that in mind if you're considering a multi-country award. Do host organizations need to be universities? Can they be nonprofit organizations or art institutions? That is going to depend on the award. So in that very first tab on the awards catalog, the award detail page, there's a specific section that says locations. You would want to look at that location. And if there's any confusion, then you would write to me and I would try to confirm that the host institution is acceptable before you go out and secure a letter of invitation. So it really does depend where you're going and what types of institutions are acceptable. But my hope is that you will find all of those details in this location section on the award description. Okay, one of the awards says that the applicant should be academics except early career. How would they define early career? Okay, there are a number of ways that it's defined, and usually you would find that information in the awards requirement tab. Early career, we generally say the first 5 or 6 years. Sometimes they specifically specify associate professor or above to be out of that early career bubble. Sometimes they suggest a certain number of teaching years of teaching experience or research experience to be out of that early career bubble. So the hope is that in this additional information, additional qualification information, you would have all of the specific details about what type of experience they are looking for. If you have any confusion, please do write me. We try to make these award descriptions as clear as possible, but ultimately there are some confusing points, and we're happy to clear up any discrepancies. So please reach out if you need an exact definition of early career for a specific country. Can you have more than one host organization, and or can you work with more than one agency, even if they aren't the host organization? That would depend on what agreement you've come up with your host organization. So if you are affiliated with the university and you're doing work within the community, as long as they're aware of the type of work that you can do, there's nothing restricting you from going out to do research in a specific community or to give a workshop or a presentation in the community. But again, if that is something that is your plan overall, I would encourage you to talk about that with the person who might be writing your letter of invitation and see if they're comfortable with the plan. And in the best case scenario, they might even have connections at that host institution to help you along the way. Okay. It looks like I have gotten through the questions that have come in. Oh, nope, here, wait, yes, I have. Are there any other questions before I sign out? This is a great opportunity to ask questions. So I checked the website and did not see to whom the letter of invitation should be sent. Oh, sorry, you did mention that. I forgot to answer that. Thank you for re-asking that question. The letter of invitation should be addressed to you, or it can be addressed to the Fulbright Commission. We're inviting that person, or dear, you know, so-and-so, we would like to invite you to come to our organization. What has to happen is the letter needs to be in English. They send it directly to you, and then you would upload a PDF version of that letter of invitation in your application. So please know that that is the way that it works. You are the holder of the invitation, and the invitation letter does need to be submitted by the September 15th deadline as well. Can multi-country awards ever cross regions, so a country in the Western Hemisphere and Asia Pacific? So I did talk about that question just a couple minutes ago, and I wanted to refer you to the Global Scholar Award. So if you are thinking of going to two different world regions, please search our catalog for the Fulbright Global Scholar Award, knowing that it is by far the most competitive award in our awards catalog. For awards related to Taiwan and or China, do you have advice for handling the geopolitical uncertainty between the two in the application or proposal? Okay, that's a great question, because they are always trying to foster mutual understanding between those nations as well. My best advice to give you is to know that, again, this is a public diplomacy program. We're trying to create positive ties between nations. And when you are proposing a project, you have, of course, the academic freedom to propose whatever it is you want. But do be sensitive to the issues that might be more sensitive in one area than the other, because to receive a cross-strait award that is bridging the gap between Taiwan and China, you do need to get your project approved by people in both countries. So I would just try to be positive in your statement, be positive about your approach and what you're trying to do, and just be mindful that it does need to be reviewed by people in both countries to be able to be accepted for that award. And I think that advice actually applies to all of the awards, just really being positive in what it is you're trying to propose so that you can work towards building mutual understanding, which is something that we value in the Fulbright program. Okay, while I'm waiting to see if any other questions come up in the last couple of minutes, I do want to click on this Begin the Application Project tab here. If you click on the Begin the Application Project tab, you will see a procedure that you can follow. The first one, this is a really important one, register your interest in My Fulbright. We have a program called My Fulbright where you can register that you're interested in awards in East Asia and the Pacific in the field of business, for example. And then you will get select emails only connected to your preferred country or region and discipline. So that always helps you stay on top of announcements that come up about the program. You can also download the application and eligibility checklist. This is actually good to have even before you start your application because it'll give you all of the things you have to get ready to complete a successful application. You can download the application instructions, and you can also click here to begin your application. You can begin your application as early as yesterday if you want to and start putting in your personal information, and I would encourage you to do that just so that you can start getting familiar with what information you need to put in the process. But remember, everything does need to be submitted by the September 15th deadline, and that includes the letter of invitation and any recommendations. Okay, so the next question that came in that is connected to this, so it's perfect timing. Can you describe the process for recommenders to submit letters of recommendation? So what you do is inside that application, which is number 4 here on this list, you would actually list 2 recommenders. We request that one of them be your chair or your dean or somebody who knows your work for your department. And if you are applying for a teaching award, we also recommend that you have somebody write a recommendation who is familiar with your teaching, who has observed your teaching, seen your teaching. And for the research side of things, include a recommender who has worked with you, maybe collaborated with you on a project. But really, for the teaching awards, you do want to have one of the letters that at least talk about your teaching abilities. So you would register them in the application and then click a button, and a link automatically gets sent to them. And they would have to click on that link and upload their letter of recommendation. And you could either waive or not waive your rights to the letter. But even if you do not waive your rights, you still can't access it until after the competition is over. The next question that I had is, do the same peer group of people that are discipline-specific review the applications within the U.S., also within the host country? No, the peer reviewers are on the domestic side. We have them gather here in Washington, D.C. to review the applications by discipline. When they get sent to your country of choice, the one to which you're applying, then they will be reviewed either at a Fulbright Commission, which is a commission set up to administer the Fulbright program overseas, or they will be reviewed by a committee selected by the U.S. Embassy. And those people are a wide variety of people who will be reviewing the committee. So you really do want to make sure that a general intelligent population can also understand your proposal. Is there a definition of mutual understanding? It's been a bit fuzzy with that term. Mutual understanding, it's more this idea that we are basically working as cultural ambassadors. And so we want people to go over, or people we interact with, to understand Americans a little bit better. I can give you an example of say, for example, an African-American who goes overseas, what they might be doing is challenging the stereotype of what an American is. But in our culture, African-Americans are part of society, and they always have been. And so they're able to talk about what life is like for them as an American, which in their perspective might be different than an Asian-American or a Caucasian or something like that. And so the idea of mutual understanding is just really to help people understand our culture and then start to understand the culture over there so that you can even share pieces of that with people you come home with. With Fulbright, we often see this trickle-down effect where the experiences that the scholars have transfer into their classroom, and so they're a little bit more aware of issues in different cultures, and they can share that with their students, and then the students gain that knowledge. So it's this idea of the trickle-down effect there. I hope that clears it up. All right, who would you recommend for letter of recommendation for postdoctoral scholars for research? What should they include in the letter? So if you are a postdoc, you would probably have your dissertation advisor, your chair, write of your dissertation, write your letter, just because they are probably the one person who is most familiar with your research. The second letter should be someone who's also collaborated with you, or another maybe committee member, someone you worked with if you had another postdoc domestically. What they should include in the letter, it should be connected with your project statement. If you're proposing to do X, then they might want to spend time talking about your ability to accomplish X or to do X, whatever it is that you're proposing. So in the letters of recommendation for postdocs, they want to make sure that you have the skills to do what it is you need to do. And so I would keep that in mind. Make sure that you have your project statement clearly defined so that they can see what it is you're proposing and try to address aspects of that or your ability to do that in your letter. And just want to, since we're on postdoc right now, if any of you on this call are not in the postdoc category but are letter faculty, please encourage your postdocs or your doctoral students to also consider Fulbright as a postdoc option, because we have varieties, we have opportunities all over the world for postdocs as well, and we would love to see more and more people aware that Fulbright is an opportunity to continue postdocs in any discipline that you might be studying. Okay, next question. Can a student write a letter of recommendation for a teaching award? We do not encourage that at all. We usually encourage the letter of recommendation to be from someone in your department or a colleague that you've worked with. The student letters, sometimes they're a little bit questionable about what the student, I mean, the student can, of course, talk about their experience in the classroom, but we generally ask you to consider getting them from a colleague rather than a student. I don't believe there is a published rule about that, but as a general rule of thumb, I would shy away from having a student write your letter. Even though, I mean, truth be told, students have a lot more experience in the classroom with you. But from a perspective of the peer review committees, it looks a little bit better if it's written by a colleague. Are letters of recommendation also due by September 15th? Yes, letters of recommendation are due by September 15th. So if you are asking someone to write your letter of recommendation, excuse me, you can actually register them now, and they can write their letter of recommendation as soon as now. I don't encourage you to do that until you have your project statement fleshed out a bit, because it does help if they see your project statement so that they know what they're writing about when they are writing the letter of recommendation. But every year we have people trying to submit letters of recommendation, and that's why we just set a firm deadline that letters of recommendation and all other supporting materials, including a letter of invitation, does need to be submitted by September 15th. Okay. We have 5 minutes left. I want to see if there are any other last-minute questions before I sign off. And I do want to thank you guys for coming. I know that many of you are probably in a position of putting your classes online right now, and so you must be busy with many things. And so I appreciate your time more than anything, and really would like to welcome you to apply to the Fulbright program and to for sure reach out if you have any questions. Okay. One final question is, what would you suggest making sure to include in the project statement? Okay, for that, I would encourage you to go look. If you look at this program right here, or the webpage in front of us, on the application over here, application procedures, we have a lot of information, for example, the project statement requirements. So if you're wondering what to put in the project statement, right here we have a list of what you should address in your project statement. So it clearly defines the things that we are looking for, and the things that we are looking for are the things that are reflected in our review criteria that we use. And if your award is for something, for example, a postdoc award, and you're doing a research proposal, then it just lists some supplemental questions that you might like to consider. The one thing to keep in mind for the application is that it is 3 to 5 pages, 12-point font, 1-inch margin, single space, but you have the opportunity to include 3 additional short essay questions. So, for example, why Fulbright, or why have you selected this country? Because you have these short answer questions where you can address those items, You don't have to include them in your 3 to 5 page project statement, so you have a little bit more room to flesh out some other ideas that you have. Okay. Well, thanks again for joining me. I see that there are no more questions coming in, but don't hesitate to reach out if you have any questions. If I can't answer the question, I will find the answer for you. If you decide that East Asia and the Pacific is not the region you're interested in, I can refer you to a colleague in another world region, but we are here to help you submit the strongest application possible. So thank you very much, and I hope you all have a great day. Be safe and be healthy, and I hope to talk to you soon. Goodbye.